Opinions expressed on any public affairs show do not reflect those of KX935, its management, or the board of directors.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, Orange County, and to all our friends joining us today. Coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson. On KX93.5.
Good morning, Laguna. It is Sunday, January 10th. We hope that everybody survived New Year's adequately and are back listening to us here on Laguna Roundtable with Righty Jim and Dr. Ari Grayson. Dr. Ari, are you out there?
I am. Good morning, everybody.
Hey, good morning, Dr. Ari. All right. So I'm going to ask you, even though I already know the answer, Dr. Ari, did you win Powerball?
I did not. If I did, my voice would be much more hoarse this morning, and I'd still be hungover from last night. How about you? I'm assuming you didn't either, Jim.
No, I didn't, and actually nobody won Powerball. It rolls over, which is interesting because if you did the math on it, there were 292 million combinations. So simply, if you the expected value was 3-1, because if you'd bought every ticket, you would have paid $292 million. And the jackpot was like $912 million or something like that. I don't remember what it was now that it rolled over. So you basically, you would have gotten $3 back on every dollar. Now, you took the risk that you didn't have to split it with two or three people. But even if you split it with three people, you still would have come out almost ahead. Now, you would have had the time value of money problem because you'd have to wait the 20 years to get the $300 million back versus the $292 million in your pocket today. But you know, now with the 1.3 million expected, that's going to really raise it. The numbers that I picked in my head didn't come up, so I don't feel bad that I lost, you know, 900 million, and I still have a chance to win 1 billion three. Are you going to, if I play, Dr. R, are you going to play next week?
No, I don't think so. I'm not a big fan of those odds.
Oh, come on. Everyone's got to play.
Well, you know, they always say you can't win if you don't play, but
exactly. Just like we're going to talk about, you can't win if you don't vote, too.
Well, that's true as well. Actually, that's where you're the bigger loser. But you know, I had a cousin when I was a kid who was a bookmaker, and I remember I was very little. His wife.
And let's be specific. We're not talking like Eli Gold bookmaker or Eli bookmaker. We're talking like he actually made books, not that he was a bookie.
No, he was a bookie.
Oh, he was a bookie. Oh, okay. Well, never mind.
And I remember he came over to the house one time. His wife is wearing a full-length mink coat. And my cousin looks at me and he says, "You see that, kid?" He says, "That coat was paid for by every guy out there who's got a way to beat the system."
Well, like they said, go ahead.
Oh, no. And I just remember that very profoundly, obviously, and very simply the fact that, you know what, you don't beat the odds. They're not set up for you to beat the odds.
Well, if you've ever been to Vegas and seen all of the casinos and the 50-story hotels, you would know that the house tends to win on gambling.
The house always wins. It's gaming for them. It's gambling for you. But
very well put, actually. Very well put.
So in any case, and anybody who knows statistics probably would shy away from that kind of adventure anyway. But
well, that's kind of interesting,
you know,
because
somebody's going to win. I love the philosophy. You know, well, somebody's going to win. Why not me? And I think that's great, and that's certainly a truism. But there's going to be, more than tens of millions, but probably, you know, 100 million people who don't win. So, yeah, somebody's going to win, and that's wonderful. It will be life-changing, for better or worse. But, you know, good luck.
Yep.
To someone out there, and enjoy it. The very first thing I would probably do would be buy a nice oceanfront property in Laguna Beach and enjoy my years.
Instead of the house you already own in Laguna Beach.
Exactly. Okay. But, you know, I'm not one of the fortunate few who's able to have an oceanfront property. So that would certainly
be. Well, don't worry. I'm playing the smallest violin in the world for you for that problem, the having. So, but it's also nice to find out there actually is a liberal out there that actually knows statistics. That's kind of interesting. I didn't really think there were any, but interesting. By the way, Happy New Year, everybody. If I didn't already wish you Happy New Year at the top of the show, this is the first show of 2016, and we will be covering Obama and guns. We'll be talking about a 2016 election update. We'll talk about the jobs report and economics in this country. And on the second half, we'll talk about Laguna Beach 2016. And for our topic in the second half, we'll be talking about our predictions for 2016. Jim and Ari see how dumb they can look next December when we check out our predictions. We actually kind of didn't really – we had some predictions last year, but nothing that was really – nothing that really was – we didn't really say, like, you know, what will this be? Because it was an election year, so there were no elections to predict. But the only one that was somewhat salient was that I mentioned the rise of ISIS. So that's about the only thing that came close to having any real meaning as far as the 2015. And it's interesting because, you know, I think we probably made those like a week before the Charlie Hebdo attacks that were the 1 year anniversary was this week. And that obviously changed the landscape for many, many things. And especially for Paris, who had a pretty bad year in general. But we'll see where 2016 goes. Of course, we do have an election year this 2016 on a local, a state, and a federal level. And we'll be talking about that in the second half.
Yeah, you know, speaking of elections, the California GOP does not have a convention this year, I don't believe, in 2016. Is there a reason for that, Jim?
I'm pretty sure they do. I think they've got they generally have two of them. They generally have a spring one in the north and a fall one in the south. And you and I attended the fall one in the south last year, and I've attended them a couple of them previously. I'll have to check their schedule. I don't know, because of the election year, if they're only going to do maybe a spring one and not a fall one, because it'll be too close to the election. Everybody, you don't want to bring everybody in from the field for that. You want them out in the field in those final weeks of the election. So maybe that's what it is, but I will take a look. Are your friendly communist, Democrat, socialist, going to have a convention this year? California branch, that is?
I love the adjectives, Jim. That's very colorful. There will be a Democratic convention, a statewide Democratic convention this year. It's up in San Jose, and it will be a wonderful event. We're expecting a lot of terrific speakers. And my understanding is that both Hillary and Bernie will be there. Hopefully Martin O'Malley will be there as well.
Well, Martin may not be around by the time that convention happens, but go ahead.
Well, you know, we'll see what happens with that. Hope springs eternal with Martin. You know, he's a nice man and a very bright man. I think
right. And even a broken clock's twice a day, but you know.
That's certainly a truism. But, you know, I think he was a good governor of Maryland, a history which, you know.
Oh, yeah. Because the people of Baltimore are proof of that today.
But, you know, Baltimore and obviously the state of Maryland has a lot of corruption in their statewide politics. I think it's somewhat unfortunate for O'Malley that he doesn't have a national name recognition or any kind of national presence. Because when you hear him on the debates, I think he's actually a very well-reasoned and thoughtful man. So it's unfortunate, but sometimes that's just the way things go. People reach the top in their state, and they're not going to get a lot of broad national recognition.
Yeah, I think it's called the Peter Principle. He's reached his level of incompetence, being the governor of Maryland and watching Baltimore burn. So anybody that's got anything to do with Baltimore and Maryland – who basically wants to speak out about guns or anything could just pretty much tape their mouth shut, because they're obviously clueless to what's been going on in their state, in their city. But we'll get to that a little bit.
Bad mouthing Baltimore and Maryland. I mean, for goodness sake.
I'm just simply stating Maryland the facts, just the facts. Joe Friday.
Maryland gave us Spiro Agnew, probably the best vice president in American history.
Thank you. Okay, fine. I deserve that one. Fine.
Have we ever had another vice president that had to resign in disgrace?
I believe we've had a couple of vice presidents, just only Nixon, and should have been Bill Clinton, but just Nixon. But hang on, we're getting off topic. Let's get into our show. We're going to kick off the news with Obama and guns. Ari, you want to lead off with Dear Leader and his gun fetish?
Dear Leader. I don't know that he has a gun fetish.
Well, okay, sorry. He has an anti-gun fetish, I guess.
I think his, his position is truly, we need to find ways to ensure that we have an American population that is safe, that can walk down the streets without fear of being shot, that we have to have a community where there's some measure of responsibility and accountability for gun violence. And I don't see the problem with ensuring that we have people who are qualified to own a gun. And by that I mean that they don't have a criminal record, that they don't have mental illnesses, that they're not on the terrorist no-fly list. I don't see where that is a radical concept, that if you're not safe enough or considered safe enough to be boarding a plane because of the risk that you present, then you certainly should not be able to walk into a gun store and buy a weapon that you could go out and shoot, you know, certainly a handful of people, but perhaps dozens of people or more. You know,
you really want to keep deer safe from terrorists, right?
We need to be responsible in
keep bandits safe from terrorism.
We all know that it is not going to cut down gun violence anywhere near its entirety, anywhere near where we need to be as a society. But we need to have some measure of sanity in place and some measure of screening in place to ensure that the most violent or dangerous people among us do not have easy access to handguns. I have never understood why we have the gun show loophole. If you have to have a background check when you walk into the store, why do you not have to have one if you walk into the Staples Center if they're having a gun show?
I don't think the Staples Center does gun shows, but I understand what you're saying. Actually, they are at the Orange County Fairgrounds, and they're out at the Ontario Exhibit Center, because there's big advertisements. If you watch the television, you'll see them advertise for the gun show of the West, I think it is. Usually it happens about every 3 months or every 2 months. And, okay, now, a couple of questions for you.
Let me ask you this, Jim. What is your take, then, on the Second Amendment? I mean, basically, the Second Amendment reads the right...
I'm not a constitutional attorney, so I'm not going to parse the words. It means you have the right to own a gun. Now, let's go off on a couple of questions. What percentage of guns are acquired through the gun show loophole?
I don't have those numbers in front of me.
Okay, 0.7%.
Okay,
so really not a large problem. Now, I argued this with a friend of mine on New Year's Eve, which shows what sort of exciting life I lead, if I'm going to argue whether we should have a gun show loophole closing and complete background checks on New Year's Eve. That shows the excitement I can set in my life. But, the basic premise I was making on the argument, and he's a libertarian who's actually in favor of the complete background checks, But he wanted just consistency throughout the system, which I couldn't really argue with. The only problem is that you create the problem for example, if your great aunt wants to give you your grandfather's gun from World War II, you've now got to go to find an FFL, a federal firearms licensee, to transfer the weapon for you, and they will charge you anywhere between $150 and $400 or $500 to do that. And that's not something everybody has access to do if they simply wanted to get grandpa's, technically, legally, take possession of grandpa's World War II Luger that he got from killing a Kraut, pardon my expression, in World War II. You know, I don't want to go off the, my dad was in World War II. He brought back some stuff. I don't believe he brought back any, as far as I know, he had no guns. He had a sword. He fought in the Pacific and in the Navy. So that's my problem, is the complexity for just simply transferring inherited guns or guns you want to pass down from father to son to grandson and requiring an FFL. All you're going to do is drive that underground. And you're just going to have illegals. I mean, you're going to have people, law-abiding citizens, illegally just handing guns off to their relatives because they don't want to have to pay $400 to simply transfer a gun to somebody who's not a danger to anybody. And that might make us an incrementally bit safer if we do that. If you would do that and you fixed a charge, like, okay, it's $50 or something like that, okay, maybe I'd get behind that. But the other thing is where Obama is highly hypocritical, especially in his town hall he did on Thursday night, he was critical when people say, well, President Obama, why don't you simply enforce the gun laws that are on the books? Because, you know, believe it or not, it's illegal for a criminal to have a handgun. I know that may shock a lot of liberals, but that's a law. It is illegal for a gangbanger to have a gun. It is illegal to modify a weapon to make it semi-automatic if it was single shot or fully automatic if it was semi-automatic. Believe it or not, those laws already exist. So while you've clearly stated that there are no laws or executive actions that President Obama has requested would stop any of the mass shootings that we've had in the last few years, what's the point? And all you want to do now is just basically make it, as Ann Coulter would say, more illegaler to basically for a criminal to get a gun. What's the point? And why don't we just enforce the gun, the laws that are on the books? President Obama claims that his ATF budget was cut during his term, but that's not true. If you look at the budget numbers, ATF's budget in 2009 was $1.06 billion, and in 2016, it is $1.23 billion. That's not a cut. Even in liberal math and liberal logic, that is not a cut. Dr. Ari, what's your point?
What's my point? You know, I agree with you. We do need to make sure that we enforce the laws that are on the books. We need to make sure that, you know, we have fairness in our gun laws, that people who need access to a handgun do have the ability to access a handgun. There needs to be some measure of training. There needs to be measures of education. But I think you're correct in that the bottom line is let's make sure we enforce the laws that we have, but we also need to clamp down on the on the loopholes. We need to make sure that we close those loopholes as best as we can. Sometimes, you know, I know it feels like we're playing whack-a-mole, that, you know, when you tighten up a law here, people find another weakness somewhere else. Certainly that's often going to be the case, or almost always going to be the case. As far as the budget numbers, I don't have those in front of me. I'd like to see what the president is basing that comment on, that he doesn't have. I think he was talking about not having as many agents to enforce the law.
Right, but he claimed that he didn't have the agents because of the budget cuts. But you have to understand, remember, Ari, liberal logic. If they propose a 6% increase in the budget and Congress gives them 4%, that's a budget cut in liberal math.
You know what? That's a budget cut in almost everybody's imagination.
No, it's not. It's not a budget cut.
Absolutely. We hear that all the time.
Ari, you know, if something goes up, it's not a cut.
No, my wife, in your world and in my world, I agree that's logic. Okay?
That's math.
Yes, absolutely, and math.
But not in liberal logic.
My wife was a consultant with a pharmaceutical council in Arizona, and, you know, if the pharmaceutical companies projected that they were going to have a 10% increase in profits this year and they only had a 7% increase in profits this year, they considered that to be a 3% loss.
No, they missed their target by 3% is what it is.
Well, but they would consider it to be a loss.
It's not a loss. It's still a profit. They still made money.
Well, yes, again, in your logic and in my logic and in your world and in my world, that's exactly how we see mathematics, and that's how we see...
Ari, what color is the sky in your world?
My world is just as blue as yours, except at sunset when it's nice and pink and purple and orange.
Well, it's a little gray here because it's partly cloudy in Laguna this morning and about 54 degrees. And hopefully we won't have any more rain, but we might. But
actually, the sky is still blue. See, this is where we have object permanence, because the sky is still blue.
I walked into that one, I got to admit.
We have gray clouds obscuring
the blue sky. Okay, you're correct. Okay, I walked into that one. Shame on me. Okay, the point is...
That's why we wear full-waist waders, so that, you know, when we step in it, you know, we don't get it all over ourselves.
Well, what you do in your private life is your business, but moving on. We're obviously not going to settle this issue. We'll continue on this path as President Obama's executive actions get implemented. We'll see how that works. You listen to Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5, Rady Jim, and Dr. Ari Grayson. Dr. Ari, I'm sorry, did I cut you off there?
No. I was going to ask you whether you saw anything positive that came out of Obama's comments the other night on gun control.
Well, I will give him a little bit of credit for the fact that he had people like Taylor Kyle, who is Chris Kyle's widow, and he had the National Gun Retailer Association vice president in there. The NRA did not show up because they were told they would have one scripted question that was pre-approved by the Obama administration, and that was what they would be allowed to ask. And considering their position in this and as much grief as they get from the president, I would think they would have gotten more than one pre-scripted, pre-approved Obama Valerie Jarrett question. And that's why they protested and did not show up. They were on Fox News on Megyn Kelly's show at the same time that the Obama thing was on for about 15 minutes. And it's simply, you know, he said he's walking them to the White House. I think they're still waiting for the phone to ring, but hey, whatever it is, it's not something we're going to solve this morning, and it's going to be an ongoing discussion, especially as we roll into 2016 and election year.
You know what? They should have been. They should be there. The NRA obviously does have skin in the game. They're a major player in all of this. And
yes. Well, they're the major blame. They're the major target for Obama.
And we always need to have voices at the table with whom we don't agree. But I will give you an example of one problem that we're seeing now, because last week the state of Texas basically passed a measure that you can have guns anywhere.
Yeah, open carry. That went in effect January 1st. It was passed last year.
Okay. Now, one of the outcomes of that is that people are taking handguns into mental health facilities. If you're visiting somebody, hopefully they're taking away guns of people who have been, who are in the facility themselves.
Well, one would generally back that.
You would like to think, but you know, I imagine the NRA would be opposed to that as well. But what we're seeing is that people are walking into facilities with their weapons fully displayed, and you're dealing with a population that has mental illnesses, and it's not a matter of taking the gun away or wrestling the gun away from the person who has brought it in, but it's a matter of you're dealing with people who have issues of paranoia. You're dealing with people who have issues of trauma, and then somebody is walking in with a handgun. That can be a very disturbing and an emotionally upsetting thing for the person who is
kind of serving. They'll probably sort that out over time in Texas, maybe. You know, maybe there'll be certain areas.
Texas,
we'll
so you're more optimistic about that than me. But we do have a lot of topics to cover today, and I didn't want to dwell on that too
long. Nope, but thank you. Nope, appreciate you bringing that up.
I think it's an important point that we have to understand that there are limits to what we can. That just because we can do things doesn't mean that we should do things. And sometimes just having restraint is extremely important in our society.
Just like you can vote for Obama doesn't mean you should have voted for Obama. But that's another problem. All right, Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5, Righty Jim, Dr. Ari Grayson. Let's move on to the economy, the topic that is generally on most people's minds. It's the wallet economy, or it's a wallet issue. It comes down to how much money's left on the old Thursday night after paying the bills. And Dr. Ari, let's see, we had economic job growth in December of 292,000 jobs, which was hailed by all of the liberals as a wonderful growth and shows the rebounding economy and how wonderful things are. And there's two chickens in every garage and a car in every pot. Or no, wait a minute, I got that backwards, something like that. White picket fence for all of you that are not racist or whatever. But in actuality, the Dow wasn't quite as enthused. The Dow had its worst first week of the year ever in its history, falling 1,000 points. And we're going to talk a little bit later in the show about what our predictions will be for the Dow. But the new jobs news doesn't really promote a good economic environment. Well, let's put this in context. During the Reagan revolution and the Reagan recovery of 83, 84, 85 ad infinitum, in an economy that was simply $7.4 trillion, today's economy is double that, $16.5 trillion. President Reagan had 23 consecutive months of 300,000-plus job growth. This is the first month in a long time we've even been close to 300,000. This is not a robust economy. This is a tepid economy. This is a tepid recovery. This is a horrible recovery, in fact. Dr. Ari, what's your thoughts?
Well, when Obama came into office, we were losing jobs at a rate of 700,000 jobs a month. So we have had steady job growth over the last 7 years. It has not been nearly as robust.
Well, but in reality, it's not really job growth. When you take into account there's 150 to 175,000 new Americans turning 18 every month that are going into the workforce. So if you're growing 50,000 jobs, you have 150,000 new entrants into the job market. Again, liberal math, while that's job growth to you, to the people that are out there that are trying to find one in three jobs, that's not job growth. Job growth means the people coming into the workforce plus the people that are looking for jobs being able to find new jobs.
Yes, but certainly growing at a rate of 292.
Call it 300 for rounding errors.
Okay, so let's call it 300. But job growth at any rate, which is above and beyond what the natural addition of people entering the workforce occurs, that's going to be certainly a positive versus losing 700,000 jobs a month. But that notwithstanding, part of the challenge that we have is that companies have shifted their mentality. When you go into a store now, you can go into a big box store, and with very few exceptions, try and find somebody who's actually working there. It seems damn near impossible. What large companies especially seem to be doing is shifting away from employing people to putting the burden of tasks on their customer.
Well, but okay, well that's two things. One, yes, they're cutting down the number of customer service representatives, and the one you do find tend to be kind of, well, you kind of wonder if they belonged in that mental institution that you talked about in Texas, because they aren't really aware, coherent. You know, they do fog a mirror generally. But that also goes to your argument about higher minimum wages. You and Feel the Burn Bernie and his $15 an hour minimum wage garbage. And all that does, and I sent you a report this week that shows that who gets hit by minimum wage increases, it's the young. They're just coming into the workforce. And those are the types of jobs that those people would have, would be customer service, would be do you want fries with that. It used to be, in many ways, it used to be the people that would say, do you want to fill up? Or can I wash your windows? And that hasn't existed for 30 years. And the same thing happens in customer service. When you make the cost of employing a no-skilled person too expensive, $15 an hour, they're not going to employ them. And they're going to go to automated. They're going to go to robots. There's already many, many memes. And they're really not memes. They're actually examples of people where they're testing out robots in McDonald's for ordering or for self-service kiosks in McDonald's or Wendy's or Burger King or Del Taco or insert your favorite fast food here. Probably not In-N-Out, because In-N-Out runs a little differently. But for most of the fast foods, you know, they're working on self-service and stuff like that to reduce the costs of the product for customers. And some cases to increase profits, sometimes just to offset other cost raises like the cost of beef and transportation and all that. So you guys argue about that, about there's not enough jobs out there, but you want to raise the minimum wage thinking that's somehow going to create higher jobs or more jobs. That just simply is, again, against the logic. So
this is a multifaceted problem because, okay, first of all, when you go into a grocery store now, rather than having five people or seven people or however many people to help you check out, you can go, you have self-checkout.
Right.
Okay.
Which doesn't always work and is annoying if you've bought anything that's not a prepackaged item. If you buy a bagel, you buy an onion, you buy a banana, and they're very rude and they're like, well, it's code 4766. Like you've got all the codes memorized for what a fresh banana is.
Well, but here's the challenge is that when you go in and they say, well, for your convenience, we have self-check. For faster service, you can check out yourself. Well, it wouldn't be faster service if you actually had enough people check out your customers. But as a customer, your time is worthless to them other than to provide free labor. You know, it's like Freddie Prinze used to joke, hey, man, it's not my job. But yet that's the kind of mentality that we've created in this country.
Right.
But the other side of that is we're seeing this constant erosion in wages. I was talking to some friends at the South Orange County Community College District recently, and after 5 years of not receiving a wage increase, so basically 5 years of purchasing power erosion, they received, and this is what I was told, they were fairly pleased because they got a 12% increase this year. Well, when you break it down, it's not a 12% increase because what they did was it's 6% this year and 3% each of the next 2 years. So when you've gone, first of all, you've gone now 8 years and gotten a 12% increase, you're talking about a 1.5% per annum increase, which is crap. go into any store and buy something, and butter costs you 50% more, and this costs you so much more, and go to try and buy a meal in Laguna Beach, and it costs you 30-40% more than it did just a couple of years ago.
Well, I'm pretty sure you don't have a constitutional right to eat in Laguna.
No, but it's no different in any other community. You can go to, you know, El Centro, and the food cost is increased. Try and
Dr. Ari, why don't you do that and get back to me on that one? I'll pass on that one.
Well, yeah, I'll pass on El Centro too, but just as an example of
I understand. I was just making a joke. I understand that, but the point is, okay, you're bringing in low-skilled people. I'm sorry, the guys that are crossing the border with just a clothes on their back to trying to make money for their families in Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, insert Central American country here, are not Rhodes Scholars. They are not master's degrees in electrical engineering. They have no skills. They have no diplomas, and many of the times they may not even speak English very well. That is not a person that is going to get a job that makes $37.50 an hour. Okay? Raising the minimum wage does not make him more valuable. Okay? The only way you are more valuable is to raise your skill set, is to become better educated, to learn more skills. Okay? It's not the dependence of a company to raise your wage. It's the dependence of you to become more valuable to a company.
Why do we have people coming in from other countries, South America, Mexico, wherever it is? Why do we have them coming in and taking sub-minimum wage jobs?
Because people will illegally pay them, which is wrong. The point is that they come here and they can get the jobs and people will illegally pay them. And if you're caught illegally paying you, they should be fined, because that's wrong. That's just simple logic.
Because even minimum wage, companies, whether they're agribusiness or whether they're construction,
well, agriculture is a little bit of a different. Agriculture is a little bit of a different animal. There's different economics there. And they've got union things. But think about Walmart. Fast food is your typical entry-level 18-year-old's job.
But Disney, they don't want to pay a living wage to their employees.
Well, okay. Well, hang on. Living wage is a liberal myth. Okay, a living wage is something that you've made up so everybody gets DirecTV, an iPhone, a new car,
we're talking
new,
about
new Air Jordans every couple of years, stuff like that. A livable wage is something, first of all, I have never found a liberal who could actually define what it is. Okay. It doesn't mean you have a constitutional right because you've come to America last week that you get the right to rent in Laguna, okay? Or you get to rent in Newport, or you get to rent in Cota de Casa. That's not the way it works, okay?
No, but
the wage
that
you get is based upon the value of the labor you provide and what a company is, what it's worth to a company.
Okay, Ronald Reagan in the 1980s, the god of the conservative right in this country.
Careful, we will not speak of him in vain.
I will.
Careful.
No. He perpetuated the myth of the welfare queen driving around in a Cadillac.
Well, it's not a myth. It happens.
Okay, but you're talking about
if you've
about
got one, it exists. Okay? Is it prevalent that every other person is a welfare queen? No, of course it's not. But they do exist. It's not like it doesn't happen anywhere.
Driving around a 20-year-old Cadillac with 175,000 miles on it is not exactly living in the lap of luxury, but it sounds good because they're driving around a Cadillac.
Yeah, I know. This is one of those ones that liberals love to bring up is, was this a Think Progress meme on Facebook this week? Was this the Think Progress meme of the week?
My position is, you know, if a person is working a full-time job, I don't care if they're working at McDonald's or Walmart or any other low-paying or minimum-wage job, they ought to be able to feed their family fruits and vegetables.
Okay, stop. Here's a problem that is constantly missed by the left and liberals, and especially some old white-haired guy who looks like Larry David from Vermont, who constantly misses this problem. Minimum wage is not meant for a 32-year-old with a wife and three children, okay? Minimum wage is for an 18-year-old who is in college and is working part-time. It is meant for an 18-year-old who's come out of college, who has a GED and out of high school and didn't go to college, okay? It is meant as an entry level. It is not meant to be a career saying, do you want fries with that? Yes, it happens because people don't increase their skill set. They make poor challenge. They make poor choices. They go out and have four kids before they're 23, yada, yada, yada. Things like that do happen.
Well, you're a college student.
But it's not the business's fault. Stop. It's not the business's fault that they make poor choices and they should be paid $15 an hour because they chose to have four children before they were 23 and no high school diploma. That's not the business's fault.
No, that's not the business's fault, but we often, okay, but these are jobs, for example, a person who wants to go to college
Fine.
And doesn't yet have a skill set.
That's why they get paid minimum wage or so.
Yes, but you should, but what we're seeing is people can't even afford to pay for their tuition. They can't afford
that's
to
not
get
a fa- to That's not a minimum anymore. Wage issue. That's a college tuition price, which, as you well know, is a liberal fallacy where, or not a fallacy, but is a liberal cycle where they increase student loan amounts and colleges increase tuition prices, which are followed by more student loan limit increases, which are followed by more tuition increases. So this is just the government paying liberal colleges more money. So that's a whole separate issue. We got to stay on track here.
Why do you think colleges are liberal?
Well, because of people. Because I'm pretty sure there aren't many Republicans that are looking for their daily microaggression.
Okay. Yeah, but getting an education is in the interest of all Americans.
Right, but it's a different subject, and we're running short on time. We'll have to pass on that. So,
well, you know, maybe what we need to do are some theme shows, Jim. You and I, perhaps we need to do theme shows where we just spend an hour talking about things like education, because education is the backbone of a progressive society. And I don't mean progressive in terms of their political leanings, although we do know that people who receive an education do tend to become more progressive.
Yes, because nothing says progress like teaching children about microaggressions.
We're teaching children about engineering and science and technology. You know, all of these things are part of
our... Well, we used to have a day where we used to have three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. But those were deemed to be racist somehow. Or there were trigger warnings because little Timmy couldn't add two and two. So that was a trigger warning. So we had to get rid of that. So, but let's move on. Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. We're going to do a quick election update, play some music, and we'll get back to our predictions that are on the tables. Election 2016. Let's see. Bill Clinton was introduced into the campaign this week, and it may not have gone as well for Slick Willie as he might have thought that he wanted it to. Dr. Ari, what's your take on how the election turned out? And my question is, how do you differentiate Bill Clinton from Bill Cosby?
Bill Clinton from Bill Cosby.
Other than that, one is black and one is white.
You know, we know that Bill Clinton had his indiscretions, let's call them.
Wow, indiscretions.
His misbehaviors, his inappropriate conduct.
He has the morals of an alley cat, okay? Let's just put it in a – let's call it what it is.
Yes, but that was his personal life, and it, as a president
– Well, it was his personal life while he was president of the American public.
Yes, he was a terrific – president, though, in terms of the economy, in terms of foreign relations, he was.
Let's talk about that North Korean deal. Yeah, that worked out really well.
You know, that's. Okay. Time and again, we see there is not everything within our control, but the policy under Clinton in terms of North Korea was to try and hold back their development of nuclear weapons. When you have a country like North Korea, it's almost impossible to get in, to verify. It's a closed society. They will do things anyway, and it's nearly impossible to hold them as fully accountable.
Okay, back on topic. Election 2016,
My thought is this. If Donald Trump truly believes that making Bill Clinton an issue, he is very sadly mistaken, because Bill Clinton can articulate policies. He knows the details. He is a wonk. He is outstanding in articulating positions and making complex issues digestible for everybody and to truly understand what is at stake.
Yeah, well,
Donald Trump
unfortunately
does not have the policy credentials or the experience in terms of dealing with nations that Bill Clinton has, and it will backfire for Trump. There is no question about it. And I saw Donald Trump this morning. I believe he was on Meet the Press, and he was talking about, well, his indiscretions, you know, Donald Trump's behaviors. Well, he wasn't president.
True. Absolutely true.
Bad behavior is bad behavior. It doesn't matter whether you were the president or not. Yes,
well, but it's the difference between bad behavior and worse behavior. Leaders are leaders, okay? They are people that are to be looked up to. They are role models for children. President Obama's peccadillo of problems and his morals of an alley cat are not what you want for a leader of the free world. Okay, it makes him, puts him in a bad position. It makes him where he can basically be blackmailed if somebody gets stuff on him. We don't want a president that can be blackmailed by Putin. And you know that Putin would do his best to make sure that that happens. But the point with Clinton is, I have to admit that Clinton does not look as Clintonian as he used to. He looks a little old. He looked a little frail. And he pretty much was pretty well stumped when they first started firing questions at him from the reporters about Trump's allegations. And he was kind of one of the first times I've ever seen Bill Clinton didn't have a quick comeback for one way or another. So and I'm not criticizing. I'm simply making an observation to me what I saw when I saw a very white-haired, you know, Bill Clinton now approaching 70.
Well, Bill Clinton, I'm fully confident, can articulate and handle himself extremely well.
He probably can, but he's just not as quick and as quick as he used to be. I mean, look, say whatever you want about Clinton. Like I said, he's got the morals of an alley cat. I think he got very lucky in the economy. He caught the internet boom at the right time and rode it out of office and then left a mess for George W. Bush to pick up, not to mention he twice could have had Osama bin Laden and didn't do it. If you want to check Sandy Berger's grave for whatever materials he snuck out of the National Archive. But he was an astute politician. I will give him credit for that. He was a top-notch politician, which oddly enough, after 40 years or 35 years of marriage, Hillary has not had any rub off on her. And I'm not going to make any Bill Clinton rubbing off jokes with Hillary. But she has not. She does not have anywhere near the political skills that Bill does. He is a top-notch. He is a top drawer. A first-class, you know, politician. I will give him that credit, and respect him for that ability and that skill, of which Obama does not really have, and Hillary does not have.
Nobody has the political gifts that Bill Clinton has.
Well, maybe I would go back to an LBJ, maybe.
Perhaps, but Bill Clinton is one of the most articulate and one of the brightest people to ever hold the Oval Office. He is such an astute politician, but I think Hillary this week when she was responding to or last week rather when she was responding to some of the things made by Trump, I think she handled it beautifully. Rather than yelling back at him, she spoke very softly. She spoke in very measured tones. She spoke in very thoughtful manners, and I think she came off looking and presenting herself much more presidentially.
Look, live in the bubble all you want. Hillary's
ever demonstrated.
Hillary's got fleas. She's got flaws. She does have a lot of interest for the younger crowd, which is why they're all flocking to Bernie. She's a flawed candidate. I don't know what happens, but she's a flawed candidate. But let's go back to Trump and Cruz this week. What's your take on the whole Ted Cruz thing? Now, we're not constitutional law professors who can argue the legality of Trump's position, whether Ted Cruz is eligible to be president because of his mom's birth or because of his mom being an American citizen while his father was a Canadian or was a Cuban. No, he's a Canadian citizen who was from Cuba.
Right.
And Trump was not, Cruz was not born in America. Cruz was born in Canada. There's arguments on both sides. There's a very interesting point that was brought up by of all people, Ann Coulter, who's a big Trumpian. She likes to support Trump. That while the law may state this, she did bring up a truth that nobody has actually litigated this. Nobody has actually floated this thing through the court system. McCain was considered to be a citizen because he was born in the Panama Canal because his father was an admiral in the Navy. And Romney's father, George Romney, was considered an American citizen because he was born in Mexico to American citizens while they were on a Mormon missionary, and so was Also, Goldwater was considered an American citizen because he was born in the territory of Arizona before it became a state in 1911, 1906, whenever it was, 1912, whenever Arizona was made the 47th or 48th state.
Yeah, 1912.
Sorry, you lived there. Yeah, okay. I knew it was right around 10, 11, 12. I know they just had their centennial. So.
Right, right.
But no one's actually litigated those through the courts. And Ari, what's your take on that real quickly?
You know, I've never seen anybody who has so mastered the art of dropping a turd in the middle of the room and then saying, geez, it stinks in here. Why? And I think that's what he's done. He's done so masterfully with Ted Cruz. You know, I'm not a constitutional scholar either, but my understanding is when the Constitution says that, you know, a person born of a naturalized American citizen, it doesn't matter where you're born, even if it's just one parent. And this is the thing with Obama, which was so specious. Yes, his mother was an American citizen. It doesn't matter, even if he were born in Kenya, even though he wasn't, he was born in Hawaii. Even if he were born in Kenya, the same thing would apply. It doesn't matter that your parents were on a mission as Mitt Romney's parents were. If you were born to an American citizen, you are an American citizen. Now, the courts obviously haven't ruled conclusively on this. They've never actually been asked to rule at all. But, you know, this has always been my understanding of the law. And I truly believe that when it does come to the courts, if it does come to the courts in our lifetime, we will see it upheld.
Yep.
That there's no question that Ted Cruz is an American citizen.
I tend to agree, but again, not scholars, and have to run it through the courts. All right, Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. We're going to play a little quick shot here of music of Elvis, and we'll be back in about 3.5 minutes because it was Elvis's 100th birthday this week. So a little less conversation from Elvis, and we'll be back.
Come on, 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 come on
folks, that was a little Elvis, a little less conversation. Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5, with your co-host, Righty Jim and Dr. Ari Grayson. By the way, if you want to reach out to us, if we do do a single topic show, we'd love to get your input on what you'd like us to discuss. LagunaRoundtable@gmail.com, Righty Jim on Twitter, and Laguna Roundtable, Laguna RT on Facebook. Please come friend us, copy us, follow us, whatever. Just don't stalk us. And we'd love to hear your input. Email us, and we'd love to hear from all of you out there. Easy for me to say. All right. We are back. Dr. Ari, you are there, correct?
I am.
All right. 2016 predictions. We're going to see how silly Jim and Ari can look 6 or 12 months from now. And what are Ari, what are you going to think are going to be your three top news items for the year?
Well, I think certainly ISIS is going to continue to be first and foremost in the minds of American population. You know, I think one of the scary things is that it only takes, you know, one or two people, the lone wolves, to create an awful lot of havoc.
Okay, what else do you think for topics?
In a free and open society, it's very hard to stop that. You know, I think we're going to continue to see the rise of the GOP outsiders. I think that's the mood of the electorate. Trump, I think, is going to hold strong longer than most people would have certainly predicted even to this point. But I think he's going to continue to hold strong. Carson is going to continue to fade. I think Ted Cruz is going to gain strength, and Cruz may wind up ultimately being the Republican nomination or receiving the Republican nomination. But I think also the third issue is going to be the economy. I think the economy is kind of teetering on the edge and perhaps leading us into a recession. So what are your three?
Well, Dr. Ari, kind of pretty much I agree with ISIS. I'm going to just make it the election 2016. I think the Republican insurgents will be one part of that. It will be also to see what happens with Hillary's emails, if anything does happen with that. And I agree with the economy. I think it's going to be a sluggish economy. And then far as the election 2016, my RNC nominee pick is, or my RNC nominee prediction is, this is not who I'm endorsing or anything. This is just my pick. As we are guessing who is going to be the nominees, is Ted Cruz. And I am predicting a vice president of John Kasich. Dr. R, you want to pick your Republicans?
I don't think that's a bad choice. I think Cruz is going to wind up with the nomination. But instead of Kasich, which I think is a terrific choice, he's actually one of my favorites among the Republican candidates. So my kiss of death has already been thrown out there. But I think it's going to wind up being Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina.
That's a good pick. That's a good pick.
I think they want some female energy in the election. And she's also, I believe, I think she has both an Indian and a Hispanic background.
I believe she does. So, okay. And on the Democrat side, while I still think she's going to wind up being federal inmate 1134672, at this point, the numbers suggest it'll be Hillary. And I think that she's going to pick for her vice presidential candidate, Julian Castro, who's the current secretary of HHS, former mayor of San Antonio. Ari, what are your picks?
I'm right there with you on the Democratic side, but I don't think it's Julian Castro. Isn't it Joaquin Castro who is the?
Well, there's two brothers. Did I get the wrong brother?
I think so. But
I'm picking whichever one is currently HHS secretary. Yeah. My apologies if I got the wrong brother.
And I think that's going to be a strong team because I think Castro brings a lot of youth and energy.
Exactly, because Hillary's old and decrepit, but yes.
And he brings, he brings with him a lot of the energy for the Hispanic population. And I think on top of the fact that we've seen so much fear and demagoguery regarding immigrants and Mexicans in this country, I think the Hispanic vote is going to be very, very highly energized by a Clinton-Castro thing. Of course, the right will probably try and paint that as somehow Raul Castro or Fidel Castro. But, we'll see that, that wouldn't stun me at all.
I'm sure he's related to them. So you're giving me the same VP pick then.
Yeah.
Whichever brother is the HHS. Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Other than you thinking that it may be John Kasich, and my thoughts that it might be Nikki Haley.
Right, I've been on the DNC side. Okay, So
I think we're good.
Okay, so and who do you think is the winner?
One can only dream, but I would hope that it would be a Hillary and Castro ticket.
Okay, God help us. California State Senator, last state senator, sorry. Dianne Feinstein's retiring. Who do you think is going to be the new California senator?
Well, Boxer's retiring. We may see Feinstein.
Is it Boxer or Feinstein's retiring? I'm sorry, Boxer?
In 2018. So Boxer is the one who's stepping down. You know, my gut feeling is it's going to be Kamala Harris, our state attorney general.
Yeah, I got to back on that one, unfortunately. We're just too much of a blue state.
Yeah, bright, bright woman, very much on top of the issues. She is extremely sharp. She comes from a very compelling background.
No, she's not. She's the sanctuary city queen, so she's not very compelling at that point. Okay, moving on to the economy. The Dow's down 1,000. It opened at around 17,500. What's your close for the Dow, Dr. Ari?
For the year?
Yes.
Oh, that's going to be a tough one. You know, it's... That's tough. I would say somewhere in the 16 to 18,000 range, but that's a pretty broad range. I don't think the economy is going to tank completely.
I'll give you 17,000 even then.
You know, we're in such a global economy nowadays that, you know, if China sneezes, you know, America catches a cold. And we need to find ways to separate ourselves from the Chinese economy to the greatest extent possible.
What do you think we're going to have for GDP growth, gross domestic product growth? My prediction is 0.8%. Very tepid growth, just barely keeping us out of a recession. Dr. Ari, what's your pick? Or what's your prediction?
You know, it would more likely be in the 1.5% to 2.5% range, but in any case, it will be very, very disappointing in terms of overall growth in the economy.
Okay, and finally, unemployment rate. I think it's going to move up to 5.2%. And again, though, because of the funny math that the liberals are doing, that the Obama administration is doing, I think that we'll have no change in labor participation rate, which will remain at 40-year lows. They're going back to the Carter administration. Real quick, Dr. Ari, what's your prediction on unemployment rate at the end of the year?
You know, that one's a tougher one to predict, but I think the latest report showed we were at 5.5%. You know, we're probably going to hang somewhere around there. It may go up slightly, but it's probably going to hang in between 5, 6%.
Okay, I might have to change. I thought we were at 5.0. If we do, then I'll need to modify that. Okay, folks, we're out of time. We'll go to roundtable. We'll play the On the Tables next week because we are got about a minute left before the Jason Fitty Full English Breakfast Show comes on. So I want to thank everybody for listening. Dr. Arwin, anything to close up?
No, that's it for me. I just want to wish everybody a wonderful and healthy 2016.
Happy New Year to everybody. I concur on that. Go ahead.
And, you know, just enjoy the rain while we have it. Hopefully it's going to keep gracing our mountains and we will get some nice snow and some good runoff.
Yep.
And some of our stressors in terms of water shortage, hopefully some of that's going to be alleviated. Yeah.
must have stomped on his head with those blue suede shoes.